That's very interesting. Not victims. Aviators. Sounds as if they're alive. Aviators in the disc, they will ship for A1, 8th Air Force Army Command. And then there's an interesting word, visitors. We don't know any more than that. By B-29, C-47, Wright Airfield, assesses the airfoil at Roswell, assure us about the flyout, and that the counterintelligence team said that this misstate, not mistake, misstate, the mistake meaning of the story that's about the UFO the flying saucer found, and they think that later today sent it out as PR of weather balloons, and that they would fare much better if you had some teams and photographs. So that is the telegram. The problem is, there is so much evidence out there, but so many people are conditioned. The only way they're going to believe the truth is when a guy in a suit, a tie and a shirt, on the BBC News, comes on and says, you know what, aliens are real. You weren't told because we thought you'd panic. That's the only way people will believe. And that's not likely to happen for quite a long time. Okay, lots and lots of renditions of the Roswell crash. This is the one I like the best. It's a diorama. I think accurately the split down the side of the craft with some bodies that either ejected or crawled out. Quite like that one. This is the model you can get. Can't get them in Britain, so you have to go on eBay, get them in America. Lovely, lovely aircraft. Fantastic. Okay. Well, we know when the craft crashed. Do you know, less than 3 months later, the National Security Act was put into place, and President Truman signing it there. What happened to make a country completely change its security posture? It went right through the Second World War with the same security posture, but I think, to be truthful, within 6 to 7 weeks of the Roswell incident, the CIA was formed. And the CIA and the National Security Council came into effect on that signing. The CIA was designed purely to deal with the alien agenda, and the National Security Council, which was headed by the President, was designed to keep a lid on it. The R word, David Icke, in one of his chapters, says, don't mention the reptiles, and in his book, The Biggest Secret, he gives his reasons why people don't like talking about the reptiles. A couple of people actually said to me, why didn't I ever go into the security services? My grandfather, my mother, it's why is it Mr. Generation out? And that's probably the reason why I am not in the security services. Quick look, we talked about being free, we talked about the Illuminati, we talked about control. After all, everyone's a prisoner here on this planet. 21st of December, big psyop operation to make people think that the Earth was going to shake or there's going to be a big burst of lightning or an earthquake, and when it didn't happen, the whole object was hoping people would think nothing happened. It did happen. Okay, this is the Hadron Collider, also known as the CERN device. You can see it in construction on the left-hand side. It's on the border of France and Switzerland. Hands up those who know about the Hadron Collider. Wow! I'm in the right place. Who's that? Ah, gotcha. Okay. He can trace his lineage right back to the ancient Mayan kings. His name is Akhtar. And I was on a website which is run by Bill Ryan of Project Camelot fame. Bill Ryan asked me to join his website. And I've been banging on about the Hadron Collider. And somebody said, my God, have you seen this guy? He's saying exactly what you're saying. They posted me a link. And this guy was saying the Hadron Collider was a very bad thing, and it was going to have a detrimental effect on the ascension. And he was going around all the hidden pyramids in South America doing ritualistic dancing and placing some ritualistic devices which he hoped would counteract the effect of the Hadron Collider. Of course, the modern world laughed at him. Those people who were more spiritually concerned began to realise there was something going on. Here is the Hadron Collider, larger picture of it. It has two purposes. One is as a weapon, space-based weapon. And secondly, if I use the word loosely, as a time machine, a device that can affect time, but not, please, in H.G. Wells, travelling through time. This is basically where you'd fire your beam, around there. Okay. It became known to a few people that the device was going to operate over the crucial period of the ascension, which is probably from the 19th of December to the 22nd of December. Energy peaked on the 21st, but was building all the time. And this device was designed to run over, and there were some people moaning because they were scientists from all over the world, couldn't be with their families. Thousands of people are employed at that base, and yet they were going to run it over Christmas, and families were going to have not their mums and dads and all the rest of it. That was very odd. And it became very obvious to me that this device would probably be better not working. It would be better if it didn't work over that period of time. I'm delighted to tell you that it didn't work over that period of time. Here's a screenshot. Shut down node B. That is a screenshot from one of their computers showing to the public that it didn't operate over the set time, and they put a nice gloss on it saying we're back in 2015. Notice 2015. The reason for it is that the window of opportunity the Illuminati have runs out at the end of 2015. So the original idea was to build a new device. They don't have the time to build a new device. What they've now agreed is they're going to build a bigger device on the same place. All things in this world are money orientated. Yet you'll find there are no private companies in this. No private company will give billions of pounds or dollars if there's no return. There is no return on this. There's no financial return. So what they've done, the Illuminati in America, has gone to all their friends and made them rake their black budgets. Taxpayers, your money, my money, to pay for this. It's not like it's a consortium, but they don't run it. So it was very imperative for the good of humankind on this planet that this device did not operate over the ascension period. Akhtar was a backstop. Had this device activated, it would have all been on him and what he was doing in South America. Fortunately, it wasn't required because the machine didn't work. We won't talk about why it didn't work, because I don't want to go to prison. Right. You're probably aware that for many, many years, the Illuminati have had the intention of killing off maybe 50, 60, 70% of the world's population. It's a genuine desire. However, the good news is that through modern technology, they might not have to kill off 3/4 of the population, because they can control everybody with microchips. So, it was Wernher von Braun who actually said that the last big false flag would be a pretend alien invasion. We need an alien invasion because it's the only way to get every country in the world to fall in behind everybody else. Right, so there'll be a lockdown on the internet. You wouldn't have any internet. You wouldn't have any mobile phones, you won't be allowed to travel, etc., etc. You can imagine. We're talking about 3 to 4 days, not very long. You'll then be told that the aliens have been defeated. However, they will find humanoid clones. Oh dear. Right. And there's a second invasion coming. Oh dear. So the only way to do this is to have a one world government. And you know what? In order to stop people being infiltrated by clones, we're going to chip you all. And then when you go to the supermarket, we'll scan you. So if you've got a chip, I know you're human, I'll let you come into the supermarket. But if you don't have a chip, you must be a clone, you're an alien. So you better get chipped. Radio frequency chipping. Let's have a look. This is a picture you're bound to be familiar with. On that side is a grain of rice. And you know, we use it for pets. Very useful for your dog and cat if it gets lost, it gets scanned and has your address. This is where it gets a bit dodgy. Shops, unless you've got the tin foil in the carrier bags. That is in fact a chip, but a very, very basic one. But what that did was give them the idea. So the little black dots are the same thing, and the little crystals are sugar grains. This is injectable. These can be injected into your bloodstream, but you wouldn't have them that sort of square shape because they get cut in your veins and arteries. So you would be cylinder shaped. And the black dot on the thumb is a chip. Now, this is what we know, but we can be sure that in some laboratory they're even smaller than this. So that RFID chip, if you have that and you walk within 30 feet of a scanner, it will say who you are, what you are. But it's a bit worse than that. I don't know if you shop in Co-op. Anybody shop in Co-op? Right, okay. Well, where I live there's a Co-op, and they're the very first supermarket to go across to the swipe in your phone. So you don't have to pay by credit card now. You get your mobile phone in your hand, and instead of your credit card, you put your mobile phone down, and it just goes straight to your bank account, takes the money out. But it's just been trialled at the moment, and Co-op are doing it. And this is an Illuminati trap. I'll show you why. We're all as bad as each other. We go around with our mobile phones in our hands, left-handed or right-handed. So let's just imagine no more credit cards. Okay? And I'm going to pay for anything. I put the phone down. After 2 years of doing that, they could say to you, that's a bit of a bind, isn't it? Why don't we just put the chip in your hand? You're so used to putting your phone down when you pay, it's exactly the same action. It's all psychological, you see. Now, the problem with that is that if I go on a demonstration, or you go on a demonstration and you do something or say something the government doesn't like, they just turn your bank account off. So you see, don't have to kill 3/4 of the population, they just turn your bank account off. And you either be a good boy, and we'll put your bank account back on, or we'll just let you starve to death. That's the plan. Anybody heard of the 2025 soul catchers? No? Alright, okay, you're in for a treat then. I'll read it. As long ago as 1995, British Telecom announced it was developing a memory chip designed to capture a person's entire lifetime's experiences. The chip would be implanted behind the eye, probably on the optic nerve. BT said that the chip would record the person's thoughts, feelings and memories and store them in digital form. BT confirmed the chip would be ready for use by the year 2025, hence the name Soul Catcher. So you have to understand that this is really, the technology is there now. So they have a chip in your body which records everything that your eyes see, your ears hear and what you feel. Okay? And that was back in the 90s, 1995. Imagine what there is now. Alright, are you okay? Do you want a break? You want me to carry on? What do you want? No, I'm asking you. What do you want?
Carry on.
Carry on, right, okay. Satanism. Satanism is the driving force of the Dark Masters. You have to understand that this is really quite serious now. If you get caught as a Satanist, you have to be passed off as paedophilia. Okay? Because Satanism can't be outed, so you're charged as being paedophilia. We're going to look at some of this now. I'm sorry, it's not a particularly nice subject, but it's part of the deception being practiced on the vast majority of humans on this planet. And in the end, the Illuminati are so clever, they just wipe it out completely so that you don't see anything. Okay. We have here a copy of the Daily Express. This was an electronic copy and never made it into public print. Savile was part of a satanic ring. And even worse, it actually says that during heinous sexual acts against a 12-year-old girl, he chanted in Latin, "Hail Satan." So this man wasn't a paedophile, he was a Satanist. That's why he was protected, ladies and gentlemen. Not because he was a paedophile, because he was a high-ranking member of the Freemasonry and a high-ranking member of the Illuminati, and he could not afford to be got until he was dead. That was the deal. Let's talk about that. This is one of Jimmy Savile's homes. I'm not telling you where it is. I'm not telling you how the picture is got. Look, somebody has actually daubed a pyramid and the all-seeing eye. Somebody knew Savile was in the Illuminati. The police got there just after that person had made a runner. And this was a journalist who sent me this photograph up on a hilltop. So somebody knew that we weren't dealing with a paedophile, we were dealing with somebody from the Illuminati. Ted Heath, My mother said that Ted Heath was a, didn't have the word paedophile back in the 70s. She just called him a pervert. She said that MI5 friends that Edward Heath was abusing children on his yacht Morning Cloud. So it's very interesting that he appeared on a television show with Jimmy Savile. And did you know that the Queen actually asked Jimmy Savile to intercede between Charles and Diana when their marriage was breaking up? Why is that? Why is a top show pop artist that high? Why would the Queen ask the disc jockey to intervene in that way? Yeah. This is Savile's funeral. My daughter was not invited to this, but she was in the building next door. And this is taken from the BBC. And the question that nobody asked at the time was, why are the Freemasons attending his funeral? This is a very interesting man. Lord Louis Mountbatten, blown up in his boat in about 1979-1980. I'm not talking about too much about that. Here's an interesting picture. Charles on the left, his father in the middle, and somebody else on the right hand side. Have I got that wrong? Have I? Oh, have I got that wrong? Look at the foreheads of the man in the middle. Who is Lord Louis Mountbatten? Okay, that's Lord Louis Mountbatten in the middle, and that's Charles. He's got his hand on his shoulder. Who's Charles' real dad? I wonder why Charles won't be king. Why is Charles being missed out? Interesting, isn't it? I won't say any more. Oh, and this is very interesting. This is a Christmas card to Jimmy Savile from Charlie. And it says, Jimmy, wishing you a very happy Christmas and New Year with kindest regards, Charlie and Camilla. My favourite. There she is. Isn't she wonderful? Look at the nurse. Look at the belt buckle. It's enlarged on the left-hand side. In God's name, what medical society has the magical pentagram and the Illuminati sign, the Freemasonry sign? Look at the woman's face. That isn't a nurse, that's a minder. Look at her. That's what normally happens at the hospital is that the royal family come out from the King Edward VII Hospital and their staff stay back. But the Queen was in such a very bad way that for the first time the member of staff came out of the doors assisting her. Look at that face. That's, you get a face on a prison warder. Okay, that this is an incredibly important photograph, ladies and gentlemen. You have a nurse wearing a belt buckle that you will not find in any medical dictionary anywhere. Look at the Queen's face. That is somebody who is changing. Regardless of whether you like it or not, that is not a natural stare. Look at that. That's, I love that picture. Pope. Let's have a look. First of all, yes, there's, why is the Pope wearing a devil on his, why would the Pope have that? But what's much more interesting to me is I want you to look at the mouth. Because if you look at his teeth, the teeth are not straight. The whole jaw is changing and going downwards. Teeth, don't look at the teeth coming down. If you were to project, that's coming down there. That's why this Pope had to go. That's why he got rid of him. He was changing. Okay, King of England, giving the devil's sign. Not very clever. In actual fact, in Illuminati sense, that is a hex. When you do that, I'm not even going to do it because we don't do it. But if you were to do it and point, you are hexing somebody. That's the Reuters photograph. And even if he's doing it in jest, he shouldn't do it because it's evil. So we'll just get rid of him. But that's your next King of England. So you know exactly where he's come from, don't you? We have Obama. Now, I know people say, oh, it's the bullhorns. Well, why is the Pope doing it as well? What's the link between the Pope and the President of the United States? Interesting. We know this man, don't we? Three sixes. You familiar with this one? Okay, three sixes, the sign of the devil. And Tony Blair's giving at a conference the sign of the devil, three sixes. When I was growing up as a boy, I think I'll wait that when we show that one. One of the first times that the 666 signal and the devil sign was used together in one picture, and this is the Beatles promoting Yellow Submarine, 1969. So there we've got Lennon doing that, McCartney doing that. Okay. When I was growing up, about 14, 15 years of age, John Lennon's father, Freddie Lennon, remarried a much younger woman, and they had two children, and I was asked to babysit for the children while they went out. And I think people say, well, you know, Freddie Lennon could have picked up the phone to anybody in the world and said, any agency in the world, send me someone to look after these children. And I was told, no, the only person we want to look after our children is you, because you understand them. And as a five-year-old boy, I can't remember his name now, Lennon's young kid, grandma, I can't remember, anybody remember Lennon's kid?
Julian,
thank you. I can remember Julian as a five-year-old boy playing the piano. Literally just there playing. I babysat five or six times. His Freddie Lennon's new wife was into astrology. And she did my mother's horoscope and refused to tell her what it was because she foresaw her death. Fortunately, she told me what mine was. And I always remember sitting on the very first time, because I had to go around and have a meal with them. And they'd all had spaghetti bolognese. And she said to me, I know that you won't eat food like that in public because it's too messy and you're very self-conscious of food, so I've done you completely different food. But I knew from that moment that astrology was the real deal. She couldn't know that otherwise. Okay, I want to be very clear on this. This is David Icke, who I've got the highest regard for, and this was his second wife, Pamela, who was a plant. David didn't realise. And here she's giving the 666 signal, and that is the reason that David Icke dropped her, because she was a plant from the Illuminati to knock him off course. Fortunately, it didn't work. So there you go, the 666. This is from Pamela's website. Looks really nice, except you can see it's a 666 again. Once a satanist, always one. We'll give her a little wobble there. Okay, that's not the Star of David. That's a pentagram. I come from Whitby. Whitby is a very magical place. Bram Stoker wrote Dracula. Dracula was set in Whitby. And so not surprising that it's a place where a coven would meet. And on the walls, in charcoal, I found that, which is really nice. And that which is not so nice, because it's making very clear that that's a satanic group that meets on the beach, God knows what time in the morning. My mother's favourite singer was Roy Wood, Wizard. And I always said to her, why do you like him? Because he's a wizard. And he wore a star on his forehead. Give him a little dance. My mother's favourite film, 1927, Metropolis. Silent film, made in Germany. And there's the wonderful pentagram behind. You can get jewellery on the web that looks like this. And it's sold as a Wicca symbol. Good luck Wicca symbol. Watch it, because that's not actually what it means. This is the rank of a witch. The moon, that's why Diana was known as the moon goddess, Princess Diana, who was murdered. And the gem or teardrops rank that witch. So you have one, two, three, and you can actually have more. Women can actually rise quite high in the Illuminati. The word grandmother. Exactly what it means, like grandmaster, grandmother. So this, although it may be in this photograph just used as a bit of nice decoration, is an Illuminati symbol. And I would expect to see it worn as a jewellery around the neck, with a stone, maybe opal for the moon, maybe red for a ruby, for blood, and then on chains, the number, little gems in a teardrop shape dropping down, denoting the rank of that witch. 1965-71. Using cinema and TV for instructional purposes. If you can imagine Illuminati families throughout the world, you can't get everybody together. So what you do is you control the media, and then just as perhaps you, like I, when I was at school, primary school, we all sat around the television or we sat around the radio. Well, if you control the media, you can start running up programs specifically aimed and your Illuminati families throughout the world. They don't have to come to you then. Very clever, actually. So I never saw things like Bambi or Jungle Book or Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. My mother wouldn't take me to see films like that. The very first film she took me to see was The Alamo in 1964. I was about 4.5 years old. She said to me, "What film do you like best?" I said, "Cowboys." So I was taken to see that, not because it was a cowboy film, because my mother wanted to see if I could sit still long enough through a film. As soon as that was over, within about 3 weeks of that, I was taken to see a film called Dr. Strangelove. Anybody seen that film? Well, one hand's gone up. It's about nuclear, I bet you, Dave. It's about nuclear war between America, and Peter Sellers is in it. And I remember going in as a 4.5-year-old boy, and the woman cashier on the desk with the ticket saying to my mother, "Do you think that's the right sort of film to bring this boy to? Don't you think he'd be scared?" And it got very heated, and then the manager was called, and the manager didn't give a shit about that. All the manager was concerned about was, will this boy run up and down the aisles upsetting the rest of my patrons? So anyway, I got in and saw the film, and I was the youngest person there, and I really enjoyed it. Other films that my mother said you are going to see, and she took me to, 2001, Metropolis, Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Things to Come, Planet of Vampires, This Island Earth, Planet of Storms, and Chariots of the Gods. In fact, Chariots of the Gods was running as a B-movie. It was a background to what we used to have in those days as the major film, and then they would put a little film on as a filler in. And we saw the filler in, and then the intermission came on for the big film to come. My mother just stood up and said, "We're going now. That's what we came to see." That was 1969. So all of these run from 1964 to, I suppose, 69, something like that. But there are other films, such as Ice Station Zebra and that. But no, I wasn't allowed to see Planet of the Apes because my mother said that was just nonsense, or Man from U.N.C.L.E., or Jungle Book, or Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, or Railway Children. They're not part of your education. In fact, my friends at school's parents used to take me. They felt sorry for me. So when they took their kids to see Jungle Book, I used to go along. That was all right, because my mother wasn't doing it. Okay, so you're going to the cinema. Stanley Kubrick, I'm going to publicly thank Wayne Keach for the dates on this, because my understanding from the security services, I'd forgotten the dates. But Wayne has put me right on that. Okay, you're looking at 1964 film, Stanley Kubrick. The actual title was How I Learned to Love the Bomb, Dr. Strangelove. What happened was Stanley Kubrick wanted to make a film about an American bomber. He wrote to the CIA, yeah, and said, "Can I film in one of your bombers?" And was told, "You must be joking." However, when his film came out, they asked to see it before it went public. So he had to send them a copy first. They looked at it and they were gobsmacked. We're talking about what's called back projection. You know when you see two people in a motor car and the street's passing by, and there's the street lamp and then the fish and chip shop, and if you watch it long enough, you'll see the same bit coming back again, okay? Well, Stanley Kubrick came up with the revolutionary new design. Now, this is 1964. This is what I have to thank Wayne Keach for, because I'd forgotten the dates. President Kennedy had said in 1963, was it, we're going to the moon? Right. In 1964, they looked at this and said, "We need you," this is to Stanley Kubrick, "for our false moon mission." 1964, not 1968, Stanley Kubrick worked for the CIA and NASA. As part of the payoff, he was given unlimited budget to make his 2001 film. And as long as he didn't betray what had happened, he would be fine. His film, his last film, Eyes Wide Shut, was considered a betrayal, and you may or may not know that the day before it was to be released, he died. Just like my mother died. That's a fact, and you can check that out. So let's have a look at his back projection. What was so special about it? What he had created was thousands and thousands of glass beads, all threaded, hanging on string, thousands of them, as a curtain, and then 7 or 8 cameras in an arc taking pictures and projecting an already pre-taken picture onto the back in sharp focus and creating a foreground, an artificial foreground. And this is what he used in 1968 for 2001. So what you're looking at there is a mound of earth, which is a real mound of earth and real animals on it, and also real actors in monkey suits. Behind it is a false picture. You can't see it, but there are thousands and thousands of glass beads hanging on strings. So just to make it clear for you, everything this side of the white line is real. Everything the other side of the white line is literally a glass bead screen. One more. There's the actor in a monkey suit, and that's the demarcation. So where do we go with it? Well, on the left-hand side from the moon mission, and the right-hand side. It's just missing the signature Stanley Kubrick in the bottom corner. What moon mission? Okay. When you have experience of the Illuminati, then you would normally expect to be involved with shadow beings or shadow people, and also jinn. Talk about meal times at home, just to give you an idea. I probably ate food with my mother in all my life 3 times. What would happen on the Saturday and Sunday or in the evenings, I would be called, told it's time to eat. Well, let's start in the morning. Breakfast time. Before breakfast, I get up in the morning, so I'm 7 years old. I go 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, play with my soldiers or my scale electrics or whatever I had. I was in my pajamas. It was not my mother's place to tell me to get dressed. She would come in and give me a cup of tea and toast. I would get dressed when I wanted to. I would then go outside and play in a lovely garden. She would then call out the window, it's lunchtime. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, I'd come in. I would sit in the sitting room. I would be given a plate of food. My mother would then go into the kitchen and eat her food. I ate on my own. I was not permitted to take my plate back to the kitchen. I had to wait. My mother would come out of the kitchen, collect my plate, take it back. I would then go outside and play until 6 o'clock in the evening. My mother would call out the window, it's tea time. I would come in, go and sit in the sitting room. She'd bring my meal. I'd sit. She'd go into the sitting room. She would eat her food. She'd come back and I'd play. If I wanted to watch any television, she would not watch it with me unless it was educational. That's how it was. Did my mother love me? She cared for me. She had a job to do. Her job was to look after me. Did I love her? I appreciated everything she did for me. This is a shadow being, my drawing, probably 1965, something like that. I didn't call it a shadow being when I was that young. To me, he was my smoke man, because he appeared to have smoke continually coming off his body, but it never actually went anywhere. It just sort of came off his body and just always the same. It was really, really weird. Just sort of eyes and spikes, what appeared to be spikes on his head. And we have a greeting. The first drawing on the left-hand side is him outside the window, and I give a signal. I have to show him that the coast is clear. I hold my arms out to the side. He can't do it very well. He's sort of floating. These creatures look like rags or a black bin bag floating. And if you saw them side on, they're as thin as paper. So, fine, comes through the window. The window doesn't smash. The window doesn't wobble, nothing. And he glides, doesn't walk, just glides in and holds his hands up as a recognition. It's part of a key lock system. Through your DNA, you are linked with these creatures so that nobody else can hack in and intercept or involve themselves in that training. This is a training program, this creature. The energy beings like this often work with children because the frequency is so high of these creatures. And children who are not yet sucked into the mind control of this matrix that we live in can respond very free and easy to that type of frequency. That's why those creatures are used. We don't have time, this is not the alien talk, but he was attempting to get me to predict the future. So yeah, and that was in Brighton about 1965, and that's my bedroom. This is not my drawing, this is a drawing of somebody who, his father works for one of the Rothschild. And I met this young woman 3 times last year. She came over from another country. Her dad was a governor of his city, an owner of a football club, a millionaire, and a high-ranking Mason, and worked for one of the Rothschilds. And she was afflicted with jinn. I managed to get rid of that for her. But that's her drawing of a jinn. If you think of Peter Pan, you should really not think of Tinkerbell as a fairy. You should think of Tinkerbell as a djinn. Okay? That is how a djinn would appear if it wanted to not frighten you. Those of you who understand the Bible, King Solomon controlled a djinn and got the djinn to help him to build his temple. If djinn gets angry, it doesn't quite look like that. But we won't go into that now. Books I had to read, never mind at school, H.G. Wells, but only the science fiction ones, so I couldn't read The History of Mr. Polly or anything like that. Edgar Allan Poe, I had to read that. So Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes, I had to read those. Asterix, I had to read those with my grandparents. I brought two to show you because they are full of satanic images. And it's incredible. And during the break, we must have a break, I've got them here and I've got a little... mark them and you can actually see the satanic imagery going on. So that was my grandparents' house. When I went there, I had to read those books. Rupert Annuals. I had to read Rupert. One of the reasons is that a guy who illustrated them for many years, a guy called Burstall, had alien experiences and weaved them into his Rupert stories. Again, I haven't brought one, but Charge of the Gods, I had to read that. No devil books allowed. The Bible wasn't allowed either, but astrology books were, and non-satanic magic books were allowed. Right, okay, television. There's nothing unusual in a boy or a girl watching these. What is unusual is the manner in which I had to watch them. One asterisk means it was important, but not overly so. Two asterisks meant that my mother would sit with me while this was being watched. We weren't allowed to eat food, drink, or talk. We had to watch the program. An M means my mother initiated it. A G means my grandparents. So with Star Trek, the original episodes, the very first one, I was patched off to my grandfather's, who had a big color telly, and I watched the first one there. Likewise, UFO, the program, the UFO, the very first one, off to my grandparents to watch it there. What my mother said in the very first one, she said, the very first one is the best one because it's realistic. All the rest are nonsense because she said UFOs don't travel like that. But that's the UFO story, we won't go into that. So that's the type of film. We're going to just talk a little bit about them. Stingray, one we had to watch, and that's where the Earth government forms a secret service to fight reptiles who live under the sea. And on the right here with the hero, we've got a character called Marina. And I asked my mother, oh, is she a mermaid? Because she could breathe underwater. And my mother said, no, she's half human and half reptile. That's why she can breathe under the water. Didn't use the word hybrid, but very clearly telling me this was a half human, half reptile creature. Very interesting, 1965. Doctor Who, one of the episodes I had to watch was Doctor Who and the Silurians, 1970. Reptiles living under the earth. 1971, a devil one. And here's dear old Roger Delgado during that filming doing the devil sign. Totally appropriate. It's a program about devil worship. Role models. Okay. There were two men in my life, all on the screen. You're looking at Danger Man, Patrick McGoohan, and on the right, Richard Bradford playing Man in a Suitcase. I was told that Richard Bradford is too rude and pushy, and it's what I will become if I'm not careful. So I'm told that's me, but that's what I will become. Can I, Dave, ask to pass these around while I'm doing my talk? Right, so there's Richard Bradford. You probably don't even know Man in a Suitcase. If you ever get a chance to see some of them on YouTube, and have a watch there. But that's what I was told by my mother, that I'm in danger of becoming. However, my grandfather, who worked with the CIA a lot, really liked this. My grandfather wanted me to become like him. So Richard Bradford. Interestingly, it's not quite a Masonic floor he's on there, but it'll do. My mother said, if you grow up like this man, I will be very pleased. This is Patrick McGoohan. Absolutely no reptile in this act at all. Totally non-reptilian, apart from the usual R brain that most people have. And this was the man that I had to watch every time I was on television. And I was told, you have to grow up like him. If you're not sure of the programs, he worked for MI5, a secret organization. All of these characters worked for some form of secret organization, and that's why I had to watch them. Patrick McGoohan went on in 1967-68 to make a program called The Prisoner, and my mother's handler at the time, Paul Dunlop, said to her, you are going to make sure that he's going to watch this, aren't you? And it was on late, I think it was on at 9 o'clock, which was pretty late, and I would have been, what, a 7-year-old boy, 8-year-old boy, and I'd usually go to bed by 9, but I was allowed, well, I was told I had to watch this. Interestingly enough, on the credits, when it opens up, you see a guy sitting behind a desk. That's actually George Markstein. He worked for MI5 in the war period, and he actually created a safe house in Scotland to hide spies in. He became a very close friend of Patrick McGoohan, and between the two of them, they created the Prisoner program. That is actually the man, not an actor, that's George Markstein, and he just has the credits on the opening scenes. Okay. If you're familiar with The Prisoner, how many of you are? Great. Is that really an undertaker, or is it a man in black? The hat looks undertaker-ish, but I suppose if it's a very sunny day, the undertaker might wear sunglasses. But here's where all pretense goes. This is episode 4. You're now getting the feeling for this program. That's very clearly an Illuminati symbol. And here is a publicity shot, and if you look very carefully, Patrick McGoohan's hand here, we have the devil sign, and in case you think that's is just chance, the guy here is showing by pointing. You have to do that in Illuminati, you have to show. So that is the finger point there. But then that's what I would expect. Alright, that's the male identified. I need now to find a female. What is the perfect female? I have to be told what that is. Do you know what television show this is? Fantastic. Well done. Brilliant. This is the role model for me. My mother said very clearly, this is the person that, you know, you must find. Okay, let's talk about Illuminati world play. Yeah, it's better. Gets better. Okay, publicly they will say, the TV company, they will say that they wanted a character with man appeal. Man appeal. Okay, that publicly go that far. Right. So we've got M appeal. If you think of masochism and sadism, M appeal. So we've got the M. Okay. So we call it Emma appeal. There's our M. M appeal. We need an S. So we can either have as Miss or Mrs. But we're going to be really risque back in 1964-65. We'll have a Mrs. We'll have a Mrs. Being with this man, John Steed. Very, very risque. So we've got a Mrs. M appeal. So look, we've got the S and the M now. But we need to refine that a little bit. We lose the E, turn it into an M. We've got that. Now, why is this important? Satanic masters don't use S&M, they use BDSM. I'm not going to labour on this too long, but for those of you who don't know, it could mean several things: bondage, discipline, submission, masochism. It is an integral part of all Illuminati masters, whether they're satanist or not. And BDSM is the style of sexual choice between somebody who's an Illuminati male and female. 1966, there was one of the Avengers show called A Touch of Brimstone, and Emma Peel played the Queen of Sin. Go and get this actually on YouTube. Interestingly enough, when it was first aired to the censors in Britain, they cut the whipping scene. Emma Peel gets whipped. They cut it just to one crack of the whip, because British censors back in those days, being very upper class, were looking for anything that was against God, any swear words or any nudity, unlike their American counterparts who understood what was going on. Do you know, the Americans banned this particular show, The Avengers, for 20 years. For 20 years they banned it, and you'll see why. Because the British just don't get it. Okay, what my mother said, this is from the show, if you meet a girl like that, I will be very happy. So this is from that particular episode, she stands with the snake. Of course she stands with the snake because it's reptilian. She has a collar around her neck. What I think you might find surprising, this is the only costume that she designed herself. Every other time the wardrobe for the company designed it, no, she designed this costume herself. She knew what she wanted to wear. And it was called A Touch of Brimstone. And here's a screenshot. There's a Peter Wingard there. Very, very devil-like. We are really talking the satanic powers now. And her great many fans, and I don't want to detract from them because, you know, they can't see her as a slave, they see her as a dominatrix, as a very powerful woman, and she was throughout all of the episodes except this one. Because if you're into BDSM, as the Illuminati masters are, your female is called a slave. And your female wears a collar around her neck. Now this is interesting, because this is predating punk by a good number of years, and she's designed that. That's really fascinating. And it's got a lead, I call the word leash, it's got a lead of chains. We know it's a collar because a master holds his slave on a chain lead or a leather leash. So she wears a collar with a D-ring, can have two or three D-rings on it, and has a chain, and then he holds her, and it's a sign of ownership. So they're just larking about here. So that is a true slave. I did a bit of research. I'm not a researcher, but I had to do this, and I found the school she went to is a very interesting school, the Moravia School with the Crusader's Cross. Very, very interesting school. I won't say any more than that in a moment. I don't know if that's Lady Gaga or somebody else, but there she is. There's the Illuminati sitting behind. She's doing the 666, and there's dear old Diana Rigg doing the 666 from that show. So we've got all the symbology in there that we need for the Satanism. Okay, so to meet them, my grandfather took me out to meet these people, not together, separately, late 60s, probably 68. One of the visits to my grandfather, West Worthing Station, got on a train, goes to Victoria. It's about an hour and a half. I was a chauffeur-driven limousine, was actually a Rolls Royce at Victoria Station. In those days, you could park actually in the station, you can't now. And it was about a 15-20 minute drive to what I take to be a TV studios, where I met Patrick McGoohan. Patrick McGoohan was at a party, and he was filming iStation Zebra at the time, and he actually was in character for me. So I was a small boy, I was 68, I was about 9 years old. So he was actually in character for me, and I was really, really wonderful that was arranged. Got some more pictures to put around for you. Right, those are going around now. Let's have a quick look when we talk. So this was the man that I was supposed to role model myself on, and that was the woman that I was supposed to become involved with. Those were my ideals. First of all, I was imprinted with values. Before my mother's death in 1979, she foretold of a new actor. This is 1979. She told me there would be a new actor who would be a box office smash. He would play a sword and sorcery role. He would be a robot. And he would then go on to be the next president of the United States of America. We are talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did not become the president of America, but he became nearly the president of America, because if you are governor of California, you are the second most powerful person in America from an office point of view. The budget of California is the biggest of any of the states. It's a bit like the top man in Britain democratically is Cameron, the second is Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson is the mayor of London, which is a multi-billion pound organization. So although he wasn't the president, he very nearly became the president. So my mother, 2.5 years before he hit the office, had already been told through the Illuminati circles, we have identified this man. This man is going to, we're going to use the media, Hollywood, to build him up, just like we did Ronald Reagan, and then we're going to use him again to be our president. So he was chosen and identified. This is a stunt shot with George Bush senior behind and a younger looking man in the front. Okay, so he was already identified. If you've seen my talks before and you know the 9/11 talks, you'll be very familiar with this. This is a screenshot from Terminator 2, and if you remember the shot, John Connor has just been rescued by the T2 robot, put onto a motorbike, and has been chased by the liquid metal robot, and then you see a bridge, and it says, caution, 9/11. Well, we all know that means 9 foot 11 inches, don't we? Except we don't. You must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that the Illuminati